All right, thank you. As was said, my name is Alyssa Tarrant. I'm a graduate student at Michigan State University. I work with Zachary Hayden in the Horticulture Department. And our lab is focused mainly on soil and nutrient management in vegetable crops. And my research is primarily focused on between row management and black plastic plasticulture production for warm season vegetables. And so as we were talking about, you get excellent weed control in row using plastic mulch, but between row weeds continue to be a problem. So currently growers in our area, the way they're managing weeds between their plastic is using cultivation tools to leave that area bare. Some growers will put down a straw mulch. And a lot of growers I talked to that said that they leave their ground bare, then they'd say later in the conversation, but some areas we end up just having to mow some weeds back. So that seems to be a kind of common practice or a common thread. And a lot of them would say it with shame, and I would said, it might be beneficial. You're putting some organic matter back into the system. And it seemed to be a common thread in all of the conversations I had with growers. And then another strategy that could be used but is less commonly used but seems to have a lot of interest is using a living mulch. So kind of like the mowed weeds, you still have something growing in there. However, you're selecting what's growing in there. So using a cover crop that's hopefully more manageable than weeds that are growing at all different heights and are potentially putting seeds back into the soil seed bank. So with all of these strategies, you end up influencing not just your weed management, but other aspects of the system as well. So including crop yield, you can imagine with these different systems, you could have different challenges with crop yield. So even though there's some spatial separation between a living mulch and the weeds, you might still have some competition. Or with a straw mulch, you could increase your rodent pressure. Differences between effects on soil health. So in our research, soil health is kind of a catch-all term, but we're focused more on the microbial community and how does that microbial community change when you're implementing different types of management strategies. Erosion potential. So you can imagine when you have plastic mulch, when you get a heavy rain event, if that ground is bare and there's any sort of slope, you can get a lot of aggressive erosion of the soil in there. And going along with that nutrient leaching, especially if you're fertilizing your whole field before you're laying your plastic and you have residual nutrients in your between row area. And then, again, talking to growers, one of their biggest complaints of areas of the field where they had bare ground was muddy harvesting conditions, so not ideal for their crew, but also adding time onto the end of their walk and pack station, especially for growers that were taking their produce to market or had CSA models. So in my research, I'm more focused on these three areas up top here, so weed management, or crop yield, and then soil health. So this is a two-year study. I'm going to be presenting first-year data because we're currently in our second year. So this is 2017, and we wanted to capture the kind of these core treatments that seemed common and then living mulch treatments that are of interest to growers, but there's not a lot of information or recommendations on how to implement that type of system. So we were looking at bare ground. We were using our dead mulch. Our straw mulch was a cut-and-carry rye vetch from a nearby field, a treatment where we were just mowing back the weeds, which was, as I said, a common practice for a lot of growers, and then looking at a rye grass, and a rye clover mixture for our living mulch species, trying to capture differences between a warm season and a cool season grass, and between a monoculture and a grass legume mixture. And the seeding rates were chosen based on the highest recommendations in extension bulletins, as well as managing cover crops profitably, because that seemed most of the resources that our growers were turning to get their seeding rate information. We were using a randomized complete block design with four replications, and we were looking at both squash, or yellow summer squash, and green bell peppers to hopefully capture differences between a longer season crop and a shorter season crop. And that also allowed for us to have three between row areas per plot that we could be collecting soil from to look at our microbial activity. So this is, again, of last year, but we've been following a similar trend this year. So we were establishing the trial in May, meaning we were seeding our squash and transplanting our peppers at this time, as well as putting down our cover crop seed for our living mulch treatments. We were irrigating those, just trying to use best management practices and establishing our cover crops to get a good stand, hopefully, or give them the best chance to get a good stand. We ended up having to mow back our cover crops and our weedy treatments three times during the season, so our kind of threshold was when they started overtopping the bed, so about 8 inches, because we had 6-inch raised beds. We were mowing back, so that ended up being about 3 times during the season on a 2-week basis. We were harvesting squash for about a month for a total of 10 harvests, pepper again for about a month for a total of 5 harvests, and we were soil sampling on a monthly basis starting from when we established the trial to trial termination. So jumping right into the data, so our in-season weed management, with our living mulches, we didn't see as much weed suppression as we were hoping for. With our rye, we didn't see any weed suppression. The ryegrass, about a 52% reduction in weedy biomass. And then in our rye-clover mixture, about a 20% reduction compared to a 75% reduction we got with our straw mulch. Probably what's explaining what was going on with the rye here is we just didn't get very good establishment, number one. And then by early July, it was just hot and we got rust. And so the rust came through and took the rye out. So the suppression we are seeing in the rye-clover mix is mainly due to the clover at the end of the season. But if anyone's grown clover before, it sounds like a great thing to put between your plastic, and that's kind of what everyone says, like, oh, yeah, just throw clover in. And it's like, have you seen how slow clover grows? So so we were seeing that kind of come up at the end of the season, but when it started looking really good, it was like, oh, it's time to terminate anyway. All right. Oh, sorry. And additionally, the edge of plastic continued to be a problem for us. So that was another growers, everyone, when I would tell them my project, they're like, oh, you need to figure out how to manage weeds on the edge of plastic. And I'm like, we'll see. It seems like a big problem for everybody, and you guys have done this longer than I have. But we, even with the mowing, we saw that prostrate growing weeds like large crabgrass and lady's thumb in particular could still just grow and kind of overtop the beds. So this year, to hopefully mitigate that a little bit, we just, from day one, cultivated a strip on the edge of the plastic, seeing if that would help a little bit. So we'll see on that. But this past spring, we also collected soil samples at our tillage depth, so 8 inches, and then we germinated the weed seeds in the greenhouse. And we see a reflection where we had reductions in biomass. We were also having reductions in seed rain, which isn't super surprising, but even if we're not getting great weed suppression in our first year, maybe if you're doing this over time, you're kind of reducing that seed bank. All right, moving on to crop yield. I'm going to focus on pepper here because in the squash, we didn't see any differences between any of our treatments. However, in pepper, we did have a reduction in all of our treatments compared to our bare ground control in both our total and marketable yield. So likely what's explaining this is competition. Even though we had the spatial separation between our cash crop and our weeds and our cover crops that were growing in there, we still saw when we would pull up weeds and even some of the clovers that were growing along the edge of the plastic, the weeds were, or the roots were just going at a 90-degree angle right into the bed. So they were still finding where the water and nutrients primarily were. And then we kind of verified that looking at foliar leaf tissue we had collected at our last harvest in pepper, and we had a reduction in concentration of foliar nitrogen in all of our treatments compared to our bare ground treatment. We were also looking at in-bed soil moisture during the season, and you can see from this key period of fruit development from flower to harvest, we had higher in-bed moisture in our bare ground compared to all of our treatments, which this might seem surprising because of our straw treatment, our dead mulch treatment. However, later in the season, we were seeing weed escapes in there, and that's kind of another problem people have with when they do use straw, it's expensive, and inevitably they still see weed escapes, and that seemed to be enough to cause problems with potential competition. All right, so for, as I said, our measure of soil health, we were looking at the microbial community. I'm only presenting here our last sampling date for our microbial biomass carbon, but all of our dates kind of look similar. We didn't see any changes in our microbial biomass carbon during the season. In addition to looking at this, we were doing soil extracellular soil enzyme assays to see if we could pick up any differences in functional diversity of our microbial community. And unfortunately, we didn't see any changes in that as well. So it seems like a single season, even though visually it looked very different, these treatments, it wasn't enough to really have a big impact on our microbial community, at least within a single season. So in conclusion, for sufficient weed suppression, living mulch seeding rates need to be really high. So we were going on the high end of what was recommended, but we still weren't getting kind of the weed suppression that a grower would be looking for. In addition, choosing the right living mulch species, which is more complicated than what I presented here, because I've had growers where they have put rye down, and I go, and it looks like a beautiful lawn, and they get great weed suppression, and then I'll ask them, what was your seeding rate? And every time it's, well, I had, like, an extra bag that was half full, and we put it over about this area. And then when you do a back-of-the-envelope calculation, it's like, so, like, 500 pounds to the acre? I don't know. So, so I think thinking more about the seeding rates, and we think they need to be pretty high to kind of get the weed suppression someone would be looking for in there. Our weeds and our living mulches still compete with cash crops, but this seems to be cash crop dependent. So there's been other studies too, and you kind of get this variable results depending on the cash crop, but it seems typical that a longer season crop, you end up with more potential competition happening than a shorter season crop like squash. And then our soil microbial communities did not seem to be influenced within a single season. However, we're doing this experiment on the same area and just rotating our squash in our pepper beds to see if there's any sort of cumulative impact on the microbial community over time if you were to be using these systems for multiple years in a row. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions. Thanks to everyone who helped with this research and is continue to help in our funding sources. So any questions or comments? I think I have some time.
I was going to start off by asking you, I have a grower that rotates between the clover paths and the vegetables. Every year she'll go back and forth. Have you seen that, and are you going to look at that?
Yeah, so this is inevitably kind of what happens where everyone's like, well, did you try this or have you seen that? So there's like a million different ways to do it, so I have not seen that. And I'd be interested to know how they're planting the clover, that they're getting a good establishment.
Start earlier.
Okay.
Previous season.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of the people that are, like, have clover, even if they're not using plastic, that, like, permanent bed system, it's like, well, we established the clover, like, 10 times, and then we finally got a stand. So so in this kind of system, it's a little more difficult. Missing a season.
So I had a comment rather than a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
And so when we're thinking about living mulches, what we want to select for vegetable systems and strawberry systems, we're concerned about root knot nematode in vegetables and stinging nematode in strawberry. So although you are not seeing any differences, you might want to think about, you know, what pathogens that might affect the crop that you want to try to find nematodes.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And we've also been working, I didn't present the data, but with an entomologist of like, okay, so there's, can be influenced a lot more aspects.
When you're solving one problem and making another problem.
Unfortunately, we don't have the nematode problem.
Yeah.
You guys. Do you have to look to see if having a living mulch among the weeds, if it affected how difficult it was to remove the plastic?
We haven't looked at that yet. But I agree. We actually, so in one of our plots on campus, we didn't get it out in the fall. So this past spring, there's a company, Tillmore, in Ohio, and we kind of work with them, and we'll tell them, like, hey, this is a problem that we're having. Can you think of something to help with that? And so they have a plastic lifter, and I was pretty not convinced it was going to work well because, we still had, even though everything was dyed back, we still had a lot of roots growing in that plastic, and it came up super easy. We didn't have a bunch in the field. But if you are pulling it up by hand, so we did that for a while too, and that was a lot more difficult. But as compared to it was bare, we didn't really make that comparison. We're keeping them in the same area, yeah.
Well, Shannon, did you have a question?
Oh, I'm just curious. You mentioned that in your squash crop, you're not seeing yield differences among the treatments.
Yeah.
So are you confident in terms of recommending your living mulch system for organic squash production?
Not confident. but I actually have this past season, just contacted a lot of growers that have shown interest in potentially using living mulches and have said, I'm not 100% confident, but from our results last year, this is my recommendation if you're interested in trying it out, and here's all the caveats. And I actually had 7 growers that were like, well, we'll try it. So, and a lot of them are actually using TEF, so I didn't present it here, but another part of this project is doing a cover crop screen.